Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
We have reached championship weekend at Tennis Paradise. Welcome to TC Live, where we lead you up to first ball every day at the BNP Paribas Open. A couple sensational semifinals on the women's side, and we are handing out our very first trophy in men's doubles. Lots to discuss over the next hour. You won't believe what happened at the BNP Paribas Open yesterday before play resumed on Stadium 1. Fans weren't the only ones swarming to see the action. Plus, Coco Gauff continued her quest to become the queen bee for the first time here. See how she was able to sting the competition. We reveal a sweet new roster for the BJK Cup. Captain Lindsay Davenport joins us to name the five players who will represent Team USA in April. And it's not just bees on the menu. Goats making the show as well. Who is the greatest of all time? We've got the answer. Get ready to tweet out all your angry hot takes. Take a look at our featured matches today. We got you covered starting in an hour with the men's doubles championship and then the two ladies semifinals. Iga Swiatek playing Marta Kostyuk, followed by Coco Gauff and Maria Sakkari. Some of those players already out on the practice courts getting ready to go. There is Iga Swiatek into the semifinals here for the third straight year. Two wins from her second title in the desert. Taking on Kostyuk later this afternoon. How about Coco? First American woman to reach the semifinals here since Venus Williams, and the youngest since Serena did it in 2001. She would go on to win it all that year. As always, you can find us inside Stadium 1 behind those glass windows. We are going four wide once again on the BMW desk. Steve Weissman, former doubles champion here, Chanda Rubin, worldwide correspondent Prakash Amitraj, the Hall of Famer Jim Courier. It's a big day here in the desert. A semifinal Friday, championship in men's doubles, but there was a whole lot of buzz going on yesterday inside Stadium 1 for the first time ever. We had a bee invasion, Chanda.
Steve, every open is your best open, but I think this is absolutely your best yet. I have to tell you, I'm getting all the references, and this was unbelievable. And I, no pun intended, but Carlos Alcaraz, this was the biggest way he was attacked yesterday was by the bees, and he made short work of Zverev afterwards. But this was danger time, and it was pretty amazing when we did get the beekeeper to come out and get the bees. All of them were saved. Not a bee was harmed, or so we've been told. Right?
You got to save the bees.
Got to save
good
them
for the environment. But and there he is. There's our guy, Sir Lancelot, Lance Davis, coming out with the vacuum, Prakash.
I'm not sure that's the safest thing to do for the bees, but you know what? He looked like he was very comfortable with it, had no mask on, no nothing. Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've seen maybe like a paraglider come on the court. I've seen protests. I've seen a streaker at Wimbledon, but I don't think I've ever seen bees.
We know that at Wimbledon they have the bird of prey that protects the grounds there, and we've got Lance Davis, the beekeeper, who protects the grounds here, which is not something we knew about until yesterday. But everyone is safe, especially the bees. And as Carlos Alcaraz put it, not all heroes wear capes. I think that's how he said it. But he's right, because the crowd was going crazy when this gentleman showed up with his vacuum cleaner, which saves the bees. He puts them in this protective pouch. He takes them. He saves them. It's amazing, actually, what we learned yesterday.
And, you know, this was not the first day he came on site. He had to do a bee removal earlier in the tournament. And so he was prepared.
I'm just amazed at how calm and chill he was. There's no way that's my body language.
No gloves.
Nothing.
No hat.
It was cold chilling over there.
Just amazing. And the guy resembled someone. We're trying to figure out, who is this guy? He looks just like Javier Bardem's character in No Country for Old Men, and that is one bad mojo right there.
He is indeed.
It was a Javier Bardem level performance.
Who comes on and gets rid of the bees with no protective gear?
Yeah,
that's somebody you want protecting you.
And then he signed autographs after. He took pictures.
Selfies.
He's a rock star now.
Lance.
But it was crazy how they all just went right to the Spider Cam is actually, I think it's called Bird Cam, of course, renamed Bee Cam in your honor now, Steve. But they literally looked like they thought it was a hive. And we were calling for them, but you got to lift that camera up. And they slowly lifted it up, and the bees just traveled up with him. It was unforgettable.
They followed the queen. I thought Chanda was up there, but it was like,
that's a good point.
All that was missing was Beyonce.
Oh.
You hit the bees hard in the opening.
I don't know how much more you have tucked away. Yeah, I can't wait.
We got like 55 more minutes.
I can't wait.
It's going to be forever remembered for the bees, but there was some sweet tennis as well, Jim.
Yeah, so that one all was when the stoppage of play for nearly 2 hours took place. Alcaraz came back on fire. Now, this is a rematch of the Australian Open quarterfinal. Well, Alcaraz got outplayed and didn't really understand his tactics very well. He hit too many shots into the backhand side. He made a big adjustment in that department yesterday. 64% of the shots Zverev hit at the baseline were forehand. Compare that to 52% in Australia, and you see that Alcaraz learned his lesson, and he was far more patient. A controlled aggression from Alcaraz is what he should be targeting, and he's been doing it in this tournament really since he lost the opening set. This was high, high level for him. Saw Zverev after the match. He didn't like the conditions. He said the wind made it tough on him, but Carlos made it really tough.
Afterward, talking about how he belongs in the semifinals.
Play suspended due to bee invasion. You dealt with it very well. But how tough was that?
Yeah, it was strange. I've never seen something like that in a tennis tournament, a tennis match. We laughed a lot about the words from Mohamed, that bee invasion. It was funny for me. Well, I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little bit afraid of the bees. Once the match started again, I had to stay away from the bees and really focus on the match.
Afraid of the bees. Love the honey, though. Other than the bee sting and overcoming that, Prakash, what impressed you the most about Alcaraz on the court?
Well, he just seems to be in the same fine form that we saw him last year here. These courts are suiting him so well. And Jim, as you pointed out, his shot selection and picking and choosing when to come out with those haymakers is the big key, because it seems like he can come up with winners from any part of the court. But to be able to have that patience, utilize those different spins, use the angles, go over the sideline, and still choose the right time to come up with those big forehands, those bump and runs on the backhand side, that seems to be the key.
On the practice court, Juan Carlos Ferrero has him doing specific drills that are really stressing patience, right? So he's mixing speeds, not just everything at one speed as hard as he can, which is his instinct. And they're trying to kind of reprogram him, if you will. And that's a nice adjustment that we're seeing him do here in this tournament. He's going to need it, too, in his next round against Jannik Sinner.
Yeah, it's been impressive the way he just seems a little calmer, a little more measured, Carlos Alcaraz, out there in court. And this was a very familiar matchup that he had lost times before, the last times they had played. So I think it was even more of a premium on shot selection and being smart about when to pull the trigger. And he just put it all together beautifully, especially after that delay, that stoppage, to be able to come back and just settle into the match as quickly as he did. It was impressive.
He is the returning champ. He's now won 10 straight matches here in the desert. And that one, as Jim mentioned, against Jannik Sinner. Winner of that one gets to 2 in the world at the end of this tournament. Meantime, we had another blockbuster quarterfinal last night. Daniil Medvedev, Holger Rune, Jim, meeting for the third time, having split the previous two.
Yeah, these guys were, they traded breaks earlier in the set here at 4-all. This was an unbelievable move from Medvedev. It'd get him to break point. He would not be able to secure it, though, because Rune had an answer for a very difficult question. Look at this shot here. Topspin lob over someone 6'6", but he used the wind that was in his face to hold it. They'd get to 5 apiece, and this is where the match turned. Medvedev would come in, charge in on that return, and Rune, whose forehand was awesome at the end of his win over Taylor Fritz, couldn't find the corner. So into the second set, let's watch this point. First point of the second set, things got awfully feisty, and you can see why here. Ball goes right at Medvedev. Apology from Rune very quickly with his left hand, but Medvedev didn't see it, and he took issue with that. And he's like, I'm on you, buddy. I see you. But Medvedev was in the wrong, and he would find out later that he was. The chair umpire would explain to him that he did apologize. They would shake hands here and try and put it behind them. But they would have another discussion about it at the end of the match. Meanwhile, Rune got up 2-love in the second set, and then Medvedev ripped off 2 consecutive breaks of serves and then rode it out and was able to break serve late again. And this is match point. And Medvedev, I think, felt a little bit bad about things. Let's listen in here.
What were you thinking when you saw the bees on court today?
Yeah, I'm a bit scared of insects, to be honest. So whenever there is a bee, everyone is like, don't move. And as we saw with the guy, normally they don't bite when you don't, like... I usually sit like this for 5 seconds and I'm like, just get away.
Can't get away from the bees. On the women's side, we had Coco Gauff facing Yuan Ye, who had a 9-match winning streak coming in, Chanda.
Yeah, and, you know, this was an interesting match. First time these two would have played each other. And Yuan hits the ball big, but Gauff from the beginning came out fairly calm, fairly measured, had still some problems with her serve. But right here, the lob, pinpoint, accurate, and she was able to run away with that first set pretty routinely. The second set got a little trickier, though, for Gauff. Yuan was actually up 2-love, 3-1, but Gauff turned things around and found a way to dictate when she needed to not give up ground on the baseline. 17 double faults, Steve, so a lot of frustration in that area. But when she did get her first serve going, she was very effective. So it just seems to be affecting the second serve solely. So hopefully she can get past that, but it was a solid win for Gauff.
Yeah, that's more than 4 games of free points and still only lost 7 games overall. But afterwards, the talk was about the bees. Coco, did you see the bee invasion today?
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced, I mean, I know you weren't on the court, but have you ever seen anything like that or experienced that on a tennis court?
I didn't know that was going on until, like, after the match, and I saw on Twitter, and, like, I don't know, like, how that happened. Like, you know, I saw the poor video of Carlos trying to run away, and, like, he wasn't quick enough for me. Like, I would have just been off the court, like, time violation, I don't care. Like, that's just crazy. But, yeah, I've never seen anything like that. And I don't know, like, I was talking earlier, I was like, the bees had to have been there the earlier matches because, like, I don't think they just appear. So I don't know what happened, but shout out to the bee guy.
Big time.
Definitely saved the day. I've never seen that. So I saw earlier this year in Australia there was a snake delay. Now it's a bee delay. So I'm like, is Miami going to be an alligator or iguana delay? We'll see.
Don't even put that out there. That's the
last thing. It would be funny as long as nobody gets hurt.
The entire animal kingdom taking over the tennis world. Emma Navarro looking for her second top 10 win of the tournament, already leading the WTA in wins. Prakash facing Maria Sakkari for the third time.
Boy, she's been fighting so well all week. That forehand has really been rolling. You saw it taking up the line there from well outside the court. Sakkari was actually up a break here in the first set, 4-3 up, but it was Navarro who fought back, took the set 7-5. But Sakkari, she's just been a lot more mentally stable this week, fighting really well. Early goings here in the second set. She was able to get up early, moves ahead to a 3-love lead, started looking a bit more like the better player, using that all-court game, playing good defense, tracking down this forehand here. Lovely little bunt lob over Navarro's head. Takes the second set comfortably. Third set, though, be a little bit of a back-and-forth affair. She was up 2-love in the third, surrendered the break, ended up real back-and-forth here until 4-all. Navarro actually up 30-15, but Sakkari really hung in there. The forehand up the line. When she's hitting that shot well, I think that's when she's playing her most confident tennis. Likes to roll it cross-court, but when she's staying over it, covering it up the line nicely, allows her to attack a little bit more, found her way into the net, and impressive fight back there from the Greek.
Yeah, completes the comeback. Now 15 wins in the desert, more than any other tournament, into her third straight semifinal here. New coach, same results. Jim, you mentioned the feistiness in your match. There was even more content from the Daniil Medvedev-Holger Rune match because we had Holger on the desk here, talked about those short shorts, Prakash, and he said, I pull him up to intimidate. What did Daniil do in that match, Jim?
Well, he decided that he would showcase his quad. What is it? The quad fathers.
That's right.
So he was in a mood. Was Medvedev, and this was before he sort of realized that he was in the wrong. I've seen him do that before. He did that in Australia after he won a match a couple of years back, and that was when Fucsovics had posted a photo of himself. You know, who's such a. I'm not going to look at that camera. I'm going to look at them. Just so you know. So Fucsovics is like posting. Posting a flex, and he looks like the Hulk. So Medvedev was sort of making fun of the fact that his quads do not look like that. We got to see him for a different reason last night. But he was very much in understanding that he was in the wrong in this one. And Runa, I think, was a little bit disheveled by him. He's had some post-match handshakes that have been interesting, to say the least, but this one had nothing to do with what he did, because he didn't do anything wrong there.
It's an interesting one, because it actually kind of spurs on Medvedev. Medvedev's one of those guys, you get into a little bit of a tussle with him verbally, he loves to go back at you, and then it allows him to play better tennis. Let's not forget, you know, the U.S. Open a couple of years ago. But I love the fact that both these players are getting into it, but they're not the originators, because there was a real quad father back in the day who rocked the short shorts and who used to intimidate in those big moments with those quads. I mean, check out those beasts there on the right.
The quads were strong, but they were hairy too. Like, there's no Nair involved. There's no shave.
Just a little bodybuilding tip. You had given those puppies a little shave, you would have seen a little bit more definition. And so you had massive size on those legs there.
What about ingrown hairs? Is that not a problem? Like,
Now we're getting into specifics, and we're actually splitting.
Listen, if you're going to put that picture up there, I'm going to take you in a dark place. If you're going to embarrass me like that, we're going to a dark place.
Jim, don't tell me that wasn't worth at least a break each set, the intimidation
with
those
shorts. We're just going to sit back and watch this discussion right here.
That was worth seven figures, those shorts. I can tell you that. That's all I can tell you. I was well paid for them.
See, I'm not mad. I am absolutely not mad at that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And where do we go from there, Steve?
We move on.
What a show. We've got this pun after pun after pun, and then
the
Quadzillas.
Oh, so good.
Can we get to a commercial and save ourselves?
This is our best TC Live we've had all tournament. This is good stuff. A lot more still to come. Has the 2022 champ been low-key off the radar for the last week? She won't be much longer. And John Wertheim going unstrung on the GOAT debate. He says it's over. See if our experts agree. We are leading you up to first ball on Semifinal Friday in Tennis Paradise. Roll up the shorts, get rid of the bees. Welcome back. Tennis.com is the best place to keep up with the action from Indian Wells and all year round. Zachary Cohen has your pick of the day in Betting Central, and Steve Tigner wonders if David Witt can put Maria Sakkari's famous intensity to better use. Download the Tennis app or visit Tennis.com today. For a look at today's forecast, here's Fox Weather.
Hello, tennis fans. I'm Fox Weather's Bob Van Dillen. This is your BNP Paribas Open tennis forecast. Some showers coming in for Indian Wells, California. It doesn't look like it's going to be a great day to play tennis. Mid-60s, it's going to be on the cool side. Rain kind of off and on. Now, remember, you can download the Fox Weather app or stream Fox Weather from your favorite connected TV device.
Thank you, Bob. Don't like to hear about that rain. Still to come, Tommy Paul tells us about some of the Hall of Fame legends he has been channeling this week. You don't want to miss it.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chanda, Jim, Prakash, Steve, back with you. We are almost to the second half of the Sunshine Double. The sport's top men and women taking their talents to South Beach. Don't miss complete first ball to last live coverage of the Miami Open right here on Tennis Channel. Daily bonus coverage on T2. We've got TC Live with myself, Andy Roddick, and Monica Puig all tournament as well. It begins Tuesday, 11 a.m. Eastern. You don't want to miss it. Back to the action yesterday, Jannik Sinner putting his undefeated season on the line, Prakash, against Yuri Lehecka.
Well, Lehecka trying to keep up that all-round game, attacking as he did against Rublev and Tsitsipas so successfully, but a bit of a different ballgame against this guy, this time, right now. Sinner was just a little bit too strong in all different aspects of the court. Lehecka, even when he pressed, Sinner just seemed to anticipate right. His footwork was on point, and He just didn't have too many answers. Sinner also serving exceptionally well. 85% won on his first serve. He kept Lehecka to 30% won on his second serve. And this is a guy who's been serving well all week. Sinner dominating the court here with his forehand. That's been such an improved shot as well. Really nowhere to look at the moment.
The youngest player in the Open era at the start of season with 16 straight wins. Chanda, what do you think when you see this graphic?
He's just been so incredible. And for me, it's the improvements that Sinner has made. Even if you look over the last, 12 months, to be this dominant at the start of the season, I mean, he looks like he belongs. He looks like he believes he should be in this position, winning multiple Grand Slams against top 10, top 5 opponents. That's really the test for any top player. And he's just been phenomenal in all these different areas.
Could not agree more. Meantime, Tommy Paul, chance to leave the desert as the top-ranked American in the world for the first time, Jim. Had to get past Casper Ruud in the
quarters. Been a tough matchup for him, Steve. He lost the last four meetings against Casper, but came out razor sharp in the opening set, was able to get up early and take that one all the way to the bank. The backhand-to-backhand exchange is very much in favor of Tommy Paul. He was rocking the two-hander nicely, but Ruud wasn't going into the good night quietly. He came back strong in the second set, put a breadstick on Tommy, and they would be heading to a third. That one would miss. But Tommy's persistence of getting to the net, we've talked a lot about the tournament. His interviews with you guys have been amazing, illustrating how he's learning from his elders about how to get into the net and finish things off. He feels like that's his best chance against pretty much everybody. And guess what? He's going to need that in his next matchup because he earned a big one. He's going to take on Daniil Medvedev here. This was amazing. He broke a string on this match point on his serve and just gets to the net, and the guns are blazing. Shooter McGavin's in the house, and Tommy's in the semis.
He is. Talk about learning from the legends after.
I've been watching a lot of this tournament, and I've also been watching a lot of the legends play tennis. Coming to the net last night, I watched Boris Becker.
Love that!
I watched Tim Hemman before my first round, Pat Rafter before my second,
so good.
And Edberg before my third round. So I've been watching a lot of the legends come to the net, and it's been a little bit of inspiration for me.
Thought you could jump out of your chair there, Pete.
Don't tease me with a little servant volley action, okay? Okay?
Tommy Paul taking on the aforementioned Daniil Medvedev in one half, and then the blockbuster that we have been circling since the start of the draw, Jannik Sinner, Alcaraz on the bottom half. Pretty cool stuff to see the semifinals that we have there, but also, Chanda, to see that Tommy Paul has got some respect for his elders.
I love it, and I love the aggressive plays that Tommy Paul is willing to make. I mean, he's one of the quickest guys out there. He understands how to develop his points. He's gotten more confident in his game, but I think this is the next step, and especially against these players like Medvedev, who can cover the court so well. Sometimes you've got to add that little element. You've got to take a little more risk, except getting passed sometimes. I think that's what we're seeing in Tommy Paul's game, and when you get success in the bigger moments, you start to believe in those plays even more. So I think it's a win-win for him, and I'm excited to see how he goes up against Medvedev.
Well, let's also understand that a lot of the players these days, even though there are variations here and there, there are a lot of similar games out there. So when you become a real outlier and you're able to sort of execute a type of strategy that you just don't see very often, you're not used to it. So you play 2-3 matches, and all of a sudden you have to play Tommy Paul, who has 30-40 net approaches in there. It's a difficult adjustment, and Jim, he seems to be covering the net well, which is different than just volleying well.
Yeah, he's going to need to do that, because to beat Daniil Medvedev in these slow conditions, for Tommy Paul, he's going to need to not only get into the net, he's going to need to serve and volley. Mm-hmm. We've seen players use the wide first serve on either court and then come in and stick the volley to the open court. So I wouldn't be surprised if Tommy Paul's looking at some more recent legends. I'm thinking Novak Djokovic, Paris-Bercy final a couple of years ago, and watching a little video of that and seeing if he can glean something. But here's one thing he'll have to keep in mind. We've seen Medvedev toggle his return position. He's not necessarily going to stay back there the way he did in that match against Novak, where Novak barely lost points once he switched tactics and served and volleyed. Novak took the match away from him, and Medvedev did not adjust. I think if Tommy Paul starts doing that with that level of success, Medvedev will adjust, especially since we've seen him do that against Hurkacz in Australia this year. So I think this is a fascinating match tactically to watch, because Tommy knows he's going to have to bring it forward. And he's been doing it, so he's teed up for it. Can he execute in the semis? Well, I'll find out together live on Tennis Channel on Saturday.
Good advice, Jim. You hear that, Tommy? A little Novak taking it to Daniil Medvedev, serve and volley styles. Maybe that's what you watch tonight. On the women's side, the world number one, Iga Świątek, continues to cruise. A couple of former champions here because Kara Wozniak, you also won this back in 2011. And she had Świątek on the ropes early.
Yeah, it's been so terrific to see Caroline Wozniacki back and starting to find her form in this tournament into the quarterfinals. Was up 4-1, but Świątek able to start turning the table. Świątek really looked uncomfortable, a lot of misses early on, but she seemed to settle into the match. The movement of Wozniacki went downhill. She had an issue that we later learned was her toe. And Świątek was able to take advantage of it, able to turn the tables, win the last five games of that first set, and took it into the second set. Beginning of the second, though, Wozniacki would see the physio, and this was that toe that she's been having some issues with. I think she stubbed it when she was playing against Angie Kerber, so she's dealt with it a couple of matches, and you could see the movement was hampered. That's such an important part of Wozniacki's game, and here she knew she couldn't continue.
Tough, but still a great run for Wozniacki. Świątek won six straight games before Wozniacki had to retire with that toe injury. Marta Kostyuk at a career high and rising for Kosh started on fire against Anastasia Potapova, someone she had never beaten before.
No, she had never beaten her before, but she was less concerned about Potapova, and she was more concerned about the win. She did a good job focusing just on herself, and the win kept the error count very low in that first set, actually for about a set and a half. Was up 6-love, 3-love before Potapova really started fighting back. Even through the win, she did such a great job on the return of serve. She kept Potapova to 46% won on her first serve, 29% on her second serve. But big credit to Potapova. She was able to start fighting back. She did go down a break here, but she slowly started finding a little bit more rhythm, getting a little bit more inside the court and trying to create a little bit more pressure. Kostyuk had a chance here trying to serve things out, 6-love, 3-5 up, but you see there Potapova getting inside the baseline, trying to dictate a little bit more with that forehand, but Kostyuk returned the favor. She got on the aggressive foot at the end and was able to close things out. Biggest win and getting into the biggest stage of her career in this slam, in an event like this.
Yeah, first trip to the semifinals at Indian Wells. Let's hear from her in the press room after.
I mean, as I said on court, on, you know, 6-0, 3-0 is not a very good score, honestly, because especially against good players, you know. So I'm very happy with how I handled everything because, I mean, she was missing a lot in the beginning and then, you know, she kind of tried to find her way, but I didn't let her. So I think that's the biggest achievement anyways.
All right, these are the matches coming up later today. Kostyuk practiced with Iga in Doha, said she is really looking forward to actually playing her in a match. And then Coco Gauff and Maria Sakkari as all the top seeds making the final four here at the BNP Paribas Open. More TC Live on the way. In today's Unstrung, John Wertheim puts a hard wrap on the GOAT debate, tells us all to find something else to argue about. Good luck with that.
This is a special Bloomberg report for Tennis Channel. The Senate appears to be in no rush to take up a bill to ban the video app TikTok. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are refusing to fast-track the legislation. Ulta's warning investors 2024 will be challenging, saying competition in the beauty industry is intensifying. And a global tech outage at McDonald's, leaving customers unable to order at its stores and through apps. In New York, I'm Yahaira Jaquez for Bloomberg.
Coco Gauff will be pleased to hear about that TikTok news. It's being delayed. Still spend your 6 hours a day.
It's only going to be a change of ownership. The app's not shutting down. It's too soon to panic, Steve. Don't worry.
Okay. I'm not worried.
It's going to be
fun. I don't
spend
any time on TikTok. Okay, I'm just, you know, it's for the kids, Jim.
It's for the kids. You know it's for the kids.
Order of play today starting with the men's doubles final, followed by the two women's semifinals. They got a full day of action here on this TGIF in the desert. Remember back on Monday, Novak Djokovic falling to lucky loser Luca Nardi. It's the lowest-ranked player to ever defeat Djokovic at the Masters 1000 or Grand Slam level. But that does not remove the Serbian's 24 major titles. Here's John Wertheim on the always entertaining GOAT debate.
Thank you,
Carlos.
Thanks,
man. Thank you.
Who will win more majors, Jannik Sinner or Carlos Alcaraz? Coco Gauff or Iga Świątek? Who is the biggest tennis overachiever? Why is the Czech Republic such a tennis factory? Will Naomi Osaka be the last player to share a surname with her city of birth? We chum the water with all manner of tennis debates and conversation starters because, well, we need them. For more than a decade, the Republic of Tennis obsessed over a single topic. Who is the GOAT, the greatest of all time, men's division? First, it was Roger Federer, who supplanted Pete Sampras before he was even 30, winning his 15th major. No, wait, the GOAT is Rafa Nadal, hot on Federer's trail and armed with a superior head-to-head record. No, hold on, the GOAT is Novak Djokovic, third on the scene but winning at a higher clip. The debate raged, positions hardened, stats were manipulated, all fueled, big surprise here, by the white, hot, rowdy passion of social media. The players did their part too, keeping the discussion alive with vacillating results. At one point, all three were tied at 20 majors to 20 majors to 20 majors. And this wasn't Jordan versus LeBron. These guys were all playing at the same time. And then something funny happened. The GOAT conversation, this 10-year meme, was put to pasture, with strikingly little fanfare. Players get trophies and checks for winning even small tournaments. This sweeping title, greatest of all freaking time, just kind of happened. For the record, let's be clear, Novak Djokovic won. He won more majors, more Master Series titles, more weeks at number one, more wins over Federer Nadal than they had wins against him. But those are just numbers, say the true believers. Yeah, no, this is sports, not Hollywood or literature or arts. There's a scoreboard. Numbers matter.
Whether I'm the greatest of all time or not, I leave that debate to other people.
So let us praise Djokovic and let us bury the GOAT debate. The conversation kept fans engaged and enraged. It launched 1,000 blog posts. It was fun while it lasted. But time to move on to the next topic. RIP to the GOAT.
Exquisite writing, as always, from Sir John Wertheim. That said, he says the GOAT debate is over. It's Novak, no doubt. Get those Twitter fingers ready to blast out. Jim, what are your thoughts? Is the debate over?
Statistically, it's over.
Yep.
It's for now, unless Nadal is somehow able to find something and get back in the conversation with more majors. But there's a lot to it, right? It's not just the major titles. It's also the head-to-head records. Djokovic, a sizable head-to-head lead over Federer, but a narrow one over Nadal. It's close. But one that's not on this graphic I've been talking about for a while, and I think it's really important, too. It's the weeks at number one. Djokovic certainly has a massive lead there. And then the year in number one, which is the true champion of the season. He's done that 8 times. Federer and Nadal, 5 times each. Sampras, 6 times. So for me, the numbers don't lie. He's the greatest and deserves all the accolades he deserves.
Yeah, I don't disagree with Jim. You know, I mean, it's black and white. At this point, you know, statistically, he's dominated every single category. But I understand that people look at things through a different metric also. I mean, look, Evander Holyfield is a 4-time heavyweight champ. Muhammad Ali is a 3-time heavyweight champ. Mm-hmm. Muhammad Ali will always be my GOAT, you know, and there's no arguing with me about that. So, you know, you can see it how you want to see it. But statistically, you know, I don't think there's any arguing with Djokovic as the GOAT. By the way, I just got to throw a little something at John there because I did see LeBron and Jordan in there. And I don't know how we're not having Kobe in that conversation. But that's a conversation for another time.
I mean, and by the way, stats would say Bill Russell, right? I mean, 11
that's
NBA rings, whereas those guys have...
Clearly, it's not a discussion for another time. What's happening here?
John got me heated during the piece.
It's 2024. It's the Mamba year. You got to throw Kobe in. And 24 majors for Djokovic.
But this is different now. These are guys that played... in the same area, so we do have a head-to-head vibe here. And I get it. There's the feelings over here of this is my guy, this is who I like to watch, this is who captivated me for so long. I appreciate your feelings. We love passion in the sport. We do. But this argument is at this side of the table. This is a fact-based discussion about achievement, not style. It's achievement. Mm. And that's a hands-down trunk slammer for Djokovic today.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think on paper, you absolutely have to go by the numbers and the stats and say that
it's clear that it's Djokovic. I think the fact that we're even able to have a GOAT debate is because these guys were so great pretty much around the same time. Their careers overlapped in a way where they were all in their primes, you know, a little bit differently, but still able to go up head to head against each other. So it's been fortunate for us that you could even have this debate, because in so many other sports, it's almost impossible to have when you have generational differences. So the fact that they were able to go up against each other, get the head to head, we see the year-end number one rankings, Djokovic still playing, still able to potentially get more Grand Slam titles, I think that does put the conversation to bed.
Listen, statistically, can't argue with anything. Novak is the greatest. I break down the GOAT into stats and legacy. Legacy, more subjective, factors in folks' feelings, whether we care or not.
We love all of our fans, no matter whoever you're cheering for. We're glad you're watching. And by the way, new generation's coming. Pick your pony. There's some good ones.
That's right. There you go. Maybe that'll be the new topic of debate. Who's going to end up with more majors? Alcaraz, Sinner?
Is it going to be Runa? What about Medvedev? He's looking pretty strong. He's not that old.
That's true. That's true.
A lot to like about tennis these days.
Exciting times.
I'm going to say a lot to love. Love means everything in our sport. And a lot more to come here on TC Live. We are leading up to the men's doubles final, but when we come back, Lindsay Davenport joins the show. The new Billie Jean King Cup captain reveals the five members of her squad. Welcome back. Time to flashback. 1999, led by our own Lindsay Davenport, Team USA took the Fed Cup title, defeating Russia in the final in Stanford, California. That was one of three Fed Cup winning teams that Lindsay was a part of, raising the American flag there with her teammates, and after the match, spread the credit around.
It's great. In 96, we also won, which is a great accomplishment. And it's a lot more fun to win the Fed Cup than other events. It's a team event. And, you know, there's been a bunch of players on the team this year, including yourself, Lisa Raymond, Chanda Rubin, that all, besides the four of us here, that really contributed to this. And we're really going to enjoy it the rest of the year.
What a squad that was.
Nice flashback, guys. 25 years ago. My gosh.
Yeah. So since then, there's now a new name.
Yep.
Now the Billie Jean King Cup, who, by the way, was your captain. And also, we've got a whole new roster of players. We've got a former Davis Cup captain with us here as well. But for those who are just getting caught up to speed, Lindsay is now the Team USA Billie Jean King Cup captain. I know playing for your country, doing anything for the U.S. has been so special to you. Three Fed Cups, an Olympic gold. What went into the decision to take this new role?
Oh, I was incredibly flattered and really honored. I've always loved representing my country. My father was an Olympian. And even in the juniors, I always loved to play in the Team USA events. So I just felt also at this stage, it's such an amazing group of players. We have a really exciting time, and I'm involved a little bit with player development because of my son, Jagger. I know what the USTA is building. They're doing great things. You can see that in the amount of players that are ranked in the pros and the top 100 in both the women's and men's. So I was excited about it. And, I mean, you look at, again, for the women's side, the players that are involved, and truly it was like a no-brainer.
Before we reveal the team that's playing in April, Jim, any advice for Lindsay?
Oh, he's already given me a plenty.
In terms of leading a nation?
Well, I'll tell you the lessons that I learned that I wish I knew before I was a captain, which is, first of all, take advantage of the players' coaches. Make sure you're in tight with them. I know you are, and you will be. But it's about, for me, the challenge was learning how to communicate to each player, because I could say the same thing to each of them, and they would hear it differently. So it's about learning how your player likes to take information, and crucially, do they want a lot of information when they're playing? Sam Querrey, I know you're listening. You did not. I apologize. I learned. And there are some players like a John Isner who wanted a lot of info. So it's finding out how to speak to your team. I know you'd do great. You're a natural communicator.
We'll see. There's obviously a learning curve there, and the tennis family is amazing. And having Jim, a former Davis Cup captain, Mary Jo Fernandez, one of my best friends, was Billie Jean King Cup captain, but also the current, poor Bob Bryan has fielded like so many of my calls the last few months and me bugging him, Kathy Rinaldi the same. But yeah, I have Billie Jean as my captain. So it's going to be tough to live up to her standards. And I'll try and take all the advice I can get.
I'm sure you're going to do an absolutely fabulous job. Let's reveal who you've got playing in April, the big roster down in Lake Nona.
I'm so incredibly fortunate. I did talk to Coco Gauff's camp at length, and she's not going to play in this tie. Wish her all the best as she's going for an Olympic medal and more Grand Slams. But amazing to have Jessica Pegula agree to play. That was really exciting for me to hear that. Madison Keys as well. But how about Emma Navarro, who's on her way into the top 20, who's really come out of, I don't want to say nowhere, but to see where she is in the ranking and to see how much her game has improved has really been awesome. Taylor Townsend, a great doubles player. Love her energy as well. And Caroline Dollahide, a player whose singles ranking has improved over 60 spots in 6 months. You got to the semis of Wimbledon doubles. And camaraderie. That's really what I was going for. A great team spirit. A lot of ladies who are working hard and really want to represent their country.
Such an awesome team. You've got all five players that are in the top 75 in singles. Three of those players top 30 in doubles. So what goes in, Jim, when you've got a team like that in terms of who you're pairing up in doubles and who you're throwing out in singles?
Well, a lot of it's going to come down to who's healthy, right, and who's hot. And then also in doubles, it's a lot about the vibe between the players and who really mixes. When you have someone like Taylor, the lefty, that's nice to have as an option, and you probably have a lot of options, I would think, to play with her if you want her to play in the doubles, right, LD?
Absolutely, and that went into it as well. I mean, we were playing Belgium. I was expecting Mertens to play. She's not on their official roster, but I had to take into account a top 25 singles player and also number one in the world in doubles. This is the team that Belgium is going to be bringing to Orlando April 12th and 13th. So a little bit of a young team for them. So hopefully with the experienced players that we have, we can take advantage of that.
Any early thoughts on the doubles pairings that you might use?
We'll see. I mean, Taylor has had great success with Pegula in the past. They've played together. Her and Madison reached the semis of Roland Garros a couple of years back. I mean, Taylor was amazing. We spoke about it. She feels like she could play with any of those four. And that was really important to me, wanting to have a doubles team that was comfortable to play together. So honestly, just so excited. Really looking forward to getting to work.
Awesome. All great players, all great people on that team as well. So we're looking forward to having it on Tennis Channel, as always, April 12th and 13th down in Orlando, Florida. We're going to cheer you on.
Thank you.
All the best. Bring home the 19th BJK Cup.
Jim, you better answer my calls.
What a team you were on. Yeah. Serena, Venus, Monica Seles, and
Wild,
you.
Wild, huh?
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, we had some good teams back then.
Yeah, and they won it.
Yeah, they did.
Back then, what, three in like 5 years, I think.
Yeah, another team was Capriati, Seles, myself. Yeah. I mean, it was awesome to play, and Billy did such a wonderful job of getting us to all work together. So look forward to trying to do the same.
All right, a lot more still to come here on TC Live. We've got our FanDuel match preview with Iga Świątek and Marta Kostyuk. Iga, by the way, playing BJK Cup for Poland in April as well. Don't go anywhere. Leading up to a championship doubles match. Back on TC Live, we've got two blockbuster women's semifinals from the desert tonight, beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern. Iga Świątek taking on Marta Kostyuk, and then Coco Gauff looking to get to the final against Maria Sakkari. Time now for our FanDuel match preview, breaking down the Świątek-Kostyuk matchup. And Iga, the heavy favorite. You got to bet $900 to win $100 on Świątek. Chanda, what do you think of these odds?
I think Iga Świątek absolutely the favorite in this match for so many reasons. This is the first time Marta Kostyuk is getting to the semifinals of this big of a tournament. It was her first time in the quarterfinals as well. Should be an interesting matchup. Marta Kostyuk can give Świątek some problems, but I agree with those odds.
Who are you putting your Euros on, P?
My Euros. I mean, maybe the spread is perhaps a little interesting. Maybe if Kostyuk can keep it a little bit tight in the early goings, the spread might be an interesting bet. But I think straight up that minus 900 is looking pretty spot on.
Played in Paris 3 years ago, Kostyuk said. Bit different match, both in different positions. Even more exciting now. How can Marta Kostyuk attack Iga Świątek, Jim?
Oh, she's going to have to be mindful about it, because with this court, Świątek's able to really D up and then get on the front foot. So you got to be selective with your offense and don't get too excited. That's the key. When the shot's there to take, take it, but otherwise be ready to grind and be ready to D up yourself, because that forehand's going to be fizzing from Iga.
I love that alliteration. Right now, new customers can get $200 in bonus bets. If your $5 bet wins, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and start making every moment more. Well, our guy Roger Federer is still doing his thing in California. He was up at the Golden State Warriors. He was at the Oscars. Now he's at Jimmy Goldstein's court there in Beverly Hills. Maxin', relaxin'. I mean, the guy is just so suave. This is GQ Magazine, story by Zach Barron right now. It says, on if he misses playing tennis, quote, not really, actually. Okay, what do we think?
I mean, why would you? Look at these. Look at these pictures. I mean, come on. See, he looks way cooler than tennis now.
It is such a shame that he has let himself go so badly after leaving the game. He looks unbelievable, and he actually talked about it too. You know, he was showing a couple of kids at Stanford when he went to watch their match over there. A couple of things on the forehand side. And he's like, you know what? This is amazing. I still got it.
Still
striking it good.
Can't move, but can hit. What a life he's living though. He's been skiing. Yeah. He's been in Thailand with his family now. Out in California. This is all part of his tour that was really, I think, initiated by announcing the Laver Cup up in San Francisco, which in 2025 it'll take place there at the Chase Center. Got to see Nico Gotsick, the son of Mary Jo Fernandez, and Tony Gotsick, his manager. He's known since he was a baby, who plays for Stanford, so that's what he was doing over there. So Roger's making the rounds. He did the Academy Awards. He got up to your place where you like to go, Jimmy's Court. That's your spot, isn't it, Steve?
Well, James.
Yeah, it's not bad down there.
There twice a year.
I've only been there once, and that's when Chris Eubanks asked me to come and watch him practice, yeah. And I was like, Banks has got some swag.
Right?
This is where he's practicing.
He does. Yeah, this is a nice spot.
Opelka hits there. Actually, Tanasi Kokkinakis was warming up for this tournament, hitting at Jim's house over there. It's beautiful.
It's as Instagrammable a court as you can possibly get.
Took Taylor Townsend there for her first hit following maternity leave.
There you go.
Yeah. Saturday on Tennis Channel, TC Live comes your way 1 p.m. Eastern, leading up to the women's doubles final. And then, how about that? A double dose of TC Live. 4 o'clock Eastern, getting you ready for the men's single semifinals. Tommy Paul, Daniil Medvedev, Jannik Sinner, and Carlos Alcaraz. When we come back, we are getting you set for all the big matchups today, including the men's doubles final between Grenoyer Zavaios and Kulhoff and Mektic.
TC Live at the BNP Paribas Open is brought to you in part by FanDuel. Make every moment more.
Back in the desert, it's a cool one today, but we've got our hot shot of the day from yesterday.
Well, just like Jim was talking about, Carlos biding his time, waiting for that patient aggression, but it was defense that got it done here. Dead run, sliding into it. Conti grip, little hook forehand up the line, even Mr. Will Ferrell.
I think he was saying, Mom, meatloaf.
How about the action on that, Jim? Coming around, a little bit outside the alley, curling in. Tough to pull that off.
That's Zverev trapped in a glass case of emotion. Friday's order of play leading up to that men's doubles final and the two women's semifinals tonight at 7 Eastern. Swiatek, Kostyuk, Goff, Sakkari, because Championship Sunday has both the women's and men's finals. It is all live right here on Tennis Channel. Let's talk about it. Oh, we're back to the bees. We're coming full circle.
You got anything left
in
the tank?
A couple more, Steve?
What do you got?
Come on, man.
I mean,
are you out of puns? Is this a first?
Nothing's bejeweled, so, you know.
Okay, all right. Behave. All right.
Listen, let's start with Goff and Sakkari, right? They're the second one on. What do we expect from that matchup?
You know, this is one that we've seen a number of times before. This will be the eighth time that they're playing, but Goff won the last two meetings. That was both last season. Goff was playing some of the best tennis of her career. I think it's going to be a little bit of a different story. The serve has been a struggle for Goff. Can she get that shot going? Can she defend her second serve? That's really been the problem. Sakkari, she's been surprising, I think, the way she's found her form. Came into this season struggling to put back-to-back matches together. This tournament, she's found that confidence. She's with David Witt now. I think that's been a real benefit to her team. And so I think she can pose a few problems. I'm still going to lean Goff,
yeah.
But I think Maria Sakkari, I think this could be a moment for her if she plays the kind of tennis we've been seeing the last couple of matches.
Sakkari leads the head-to-head 4-3. Yeah. Coco's won the last two, though, Jim. Let's get more into that David Witt factor. I mean, first tournament together, into the semifinals?
Listen, Maria Sakkari, sometimes she runs with a little too much intensity historically. And David Witt is a savvy tennis coach, an experienced tennis coach. He's not overcomplicating things in the onset, which is really important. But above all, he brings a pretty laid-back vibe. And I think maybe she's talked openly about how that's helped her feel a little bit more relaxed. And it's certainly paying a nice dividend for her. So Dimwit, as I love to call him all those days, is bringing a little brightness to her, which is nice.
And
see that little
there.
Turnaround?
I see what you did there.
That was
yeah,
very
yeah,
nice.
Right?
That was great. Right? He's also that temperament that you're talking about, Jim. It's coming out in those big moments. You know, there are matches in her career where Maria has gotten tight. She hasn't been able to close out certain moments, and she's done that really well here. She's found her way into the net, which I think could be a huge factor if she's able to do that against Coco, maybe pull her out a little wide to her forehand side. But that serve, cleaning that up, she had 17 double faults in that last round. She went and worked on it, actually, after the match.
See Coco. The flags out there, Prakash? Yeah. Doesn't look too breezy at the moment, right? That was a factor yesterday,
That was a huge factor, and that affects Coco's ball toss and so forth. So her cleaning that up, I do lean towards Coco, but Sakkari's playing some great ball this week.
We'll see if Corey Gauff is in the player box or not, or if he gets pulled in at some point during the match. Whenever he has gone in, yesterday she said, I don't think I lost a game after he came
in. It's up to Mama. It's up to Candy. Candy
Executive
knows.
Decisions.
That's right.
Yep.
Game time decision.
That's right.
We need you. Bring in the lefty.
That's it. Bring in the reliever.
Marta Kostyuk playing spectacular tennis. I mean, at a career high right now, coming off of what she did in San Diego, now here in the semifinals of 1,000-level event for the first time in her life. And the test is the greatest test in women's tennis right now, the world number one.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the challenge for Kostyuk. Obviously, just handling the moment. We'll see how well she does. But, you know, she's been a player who's so impressive. She has an experienced coach in her corner as well, Sandra Zanuska, who has been around a long time, a former player. So I think that's helped Kostyuk as well. And, you know, she's got such a live arm. Sometimes she can get a little bit wild. So the question is, can she rein some of that in enough to play disciplined tennis against Iga Swiatek, who has looked good, who has, you know, faced a little bit of adversity, was down against Wozniacki, managed to settle herself in. I think this is Swiatek's match to win or lose, but Kostyuk, she can upset the balance a little bit. Can she do it consistently? That's going to be the question.
Well, the best thing she has going for her coming into this match is how tremendously confident she is. I mean, she hasn't dropped a set all week, first time in the semis of a 1,000-level event. My biggest issue, though, with this matchup is Kostyuk, she's been so solid, so buttoned up, but she doesn't have that massive weapon that can pierce Iga, especially on a court like this. You know, you see the players who give her the most trouble. It is the Rybakinas, the Sabalenkas, and that kind of blazing power. So, Jim, perhaps as you talked about, when she does get those opportunities, perhaps go a little bit out of her comfort zone with the power.
And I'm interested in Chana, one question for you. Swiatek seems like she plays with such margin for error. How is she beatable in these conditions, slow conditions out here? How do you get her?
I think that's the tough part when it is a bit slower, but we've seen the players who are big hitters who can take the racket out of her hand, who can rush her. And Kostyuk, I think she does have that ability to hit big enough at times. Can she do it consistently? I also think coming into the net, Kostyuk will make those kinds of moves that could also rush Swiatek. But that's been the challenge for most players here, especially in the desert. It's tough to rush her with the speed of court, with conditions. You bring a little wind coming into play, and Swiatek, she has so much more margin on her shots. That's been the challenge.
That's why they roll out the balls.
Yeah.
Pop the cans, pop the tops.
Excited to see it. By the way, you're going to be on the call.
I'm on the call with Lindsay.
With Lindsay Davenport for both of the semifinals.
Stuff.
This is a big day.
It's a big day. I started with you guys.
It's a big day and a long day.
No.
But we're all going to be here for it.
We're just going up from here. I love it.
Yeah. That's 7 Eastern for those semifinals on the women's side. When we come back, Brett Haber, Paul Anacone in the booth for the men's doubles final. Marcel Grenoliers and Horacio Zaballos taking on Wesley Kulhoff and Nikola Mektic. We're handing out trophies at the BNP Paribas Open. Thank you so much for watching TC Live. Interviews with your favorite stars throughout the day right here at the desk. Enjoy the tennis, everyone.